Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Iowa Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. There are two cases to be argued this morning, and they've been scheduled to be argued. I understand they have the same counsel, but they're scheduled to be argued before two master commissioners. So we'll hear the first argument, and then we'll take a brief 5-minute recess, and then we'll hear the second argument. The first argument this morning is case number 2013-1951, Ross versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. For the appellant, Mr. Morton.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I think this is probably a fairly simple case to decide. It's a fact-driven case. I remember in law school, the dean said, when you have the facts, pound on the facts. When you have the law, pound on the law. This is a fact-driven case. We are talking about a property on a street where every property is selling for like $30,000 or less. I mean, I've got a whole list of what's on the street. And here, this property is actually in bad condition, such bad condition that it's been cited by the Cleveland Housing Department for housing code violations. The condition of the property was described by the witness at the hearing of the Board of Revision. So
let me ask you briefly about that. The witness, what was the witness's relationship to the property again? Well, it wasn't actually the owner of the property, but an employee of the owner, or?
He is really kind of, I guess you'd say a friend and an advisor, financial advisor to the owner. In other words, I believe that the owner purchased the property. The Rosses owned the property for quite some time. They just don't want anything to do with it because it's deteriorated. The street nothing on the street is worth anything. So Mr. Victor is kind of helping them, well, him, because Mrs. Ross is gone. She died. So Mr. Victor is the one sort of managing the property for Mr. Ross. So he has personal knowledge of everything. He testified based on personal knowledge. So that's who he is. I guess you could call him the caretaker or the manager. But he's very involved in buying up properties in that part of Cleveland Heights because they would like to probably gentrify it at some point. That point is not now. So the condition is described as, I think he talked about the roof being partially collapsed, the copper had been vandalized and the copper piping and radiators stolen. So obviously it's an abandoned house that's been vandalized. So how could it possibly be worth over $100,000? And so that's unreasonable. There's no particular expertise involved in this case. This is just all common sense. It's on a street where every property sells for what it sells for, which is, let's say, $30,000. This property is in particularly bad condition.
One of the striking things about your presentation in the brief and this morning is that you're saying that the evidence presented would indicate to a person of common sense that the auditor's valuation might be too high. But there's another step to be taken, and that is, if the auditor's valuation is not correct, what proof is there of some other specific value?
I mean, what proof is there of some other specific value?
Yes.
I don't believe that we have a burden to come up with a specific value. But in point of fact, the complaint against valuation said $30,000. Frankly, it's not worth $30,000. So we put down $30,000 on the complaint.
Well, then the essence of your case is then that you've not actually proven a value. You've merely shown that there's reason to question what the fiscal officer did in valuing the property.
Well, this is a civil case. Our burden of proof is very light. It's a preponderance of the evidence. If Mr. Victor goes in there and says, this is the condition of the house, unless there's evidence to the contrary, that's a preponderance of the evidence right there. It's our point, it's our contention that at that point we've met our burden of producing evidence, and at that point the fiscal officer needs to come forward with something showing that his value is correct.
I guess the distinction that I'm drawing is the burden of proof to prove what? On the one hand, you know, arguably the evidence in the record might suggest that the property is overvalued. So that's one thing that could be proven. But the thing that it seems to me under the case law needs to be proven is specifically what the value is.
Yeah,
not merely that the original value might be wrong.
I would have to, that may be what the case law says. The case law is incorrect. The overriding consideration here is Article 12, Section 2 of the Constitution, which was enacted back in 1859, I think. And it was put in there because the people wanted to make sure that the government didn't tax too high. They wanted to put limitations on the government's taxing power. So things had to be based on the true value in money. That's the overriding fact. There's nothing that says that we have to prove an exact value. But in point of fact, in this case, for example, Mr. Victor testified that he did list the property for sale at $30,000 and there were no offers. So that's an indication that he was willing to sell at 30. There were no willing buyers. So if you want a specific figure, there it is. My point is that the auditors, the county fiscal officers' numbers are ridiculous. When I talk to someone in Cleveland Heights and tell them what these properties are assessed at on DeSoto, they kind of smile and laugh. And that includes the people in the building department. Okay, so this is a joke in Cleveland Heights. In other words, all anyone says is, yeah, well, that's the county keeping the taxes up high so they can pay their salaries and fringes. And that's exactly what's going on. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals, based on their opinion in this case, they're really not any better. They make the claim that what we submitted was nothing more than a raw sales data. That's completely off the mark. Our list of comparables was a list on the same street. The features of the houses are all disclosed. It's not a list of raw sales data. It's a list of comparables on the same street. That's exactly the type of comparables. Those are the best comparables going on your street. What is your house worth? You look at what's selling on the street. So now, Because the fiscal officer never came forward with any evidence of how they compute value, it couldn't be part of this case. But since that time, I have, in a subsequent cases that are going to be heard next week on these same two properties, and if we don't win those, they'll be coming up here. Those have the fiscal officer's method on it. And the method is the comparables come from streets other than DeSoto. Okay, so they're ridiculous. Our comparables are the best comparables going. They're not raw sales data. They're what they are. So as I said, there's no expertise involved here. There's no appraisal expertise involved. The appraisers on the Board of Revision, if they had been real appraisers instead of people trying to jack up the tax base in Cuyahoga County, they would have said, oh, supply and demand is a principle of appraisal. It's right in the book. Appraisal of Real Estate, that's the book that's acknowledged as the standard by the Board of Tax Appeals. Supply and demand, substitution. If you don't like something, you find a substitute. If you don't like me as an attorney, you go out and hire another attorney. Everyone's replaceable, every house is replaceable. So why would anyone pay over $100,000 for the house on DeSoto when all the other properties on the street are going for a fraction of that? So if the members of the Board of Revision had been real appraisers, I mean in the sense of, you know, conscientious and doing their duty, they would have taken those factors into account. Well, wait a minute, supply and demand, substitution. No one in their right mind would have paid $100,000 for that property. So, and that's why we've got people in Cleveland Heights sort of laughing and smiling when I tell them what those values are in DeSoto. And that's why it's imperative that this court take action, because we've got a corrupt system in Cuyahoga County, and the only way, the only people that are going to put a stop to it is this court. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Mr. Oradini, okay.
Morning, Master Commissioner. I agree with Mr. Morton in the sense that there are facts that are relevant to this case, but when you have the facts, you left out the part you have to apply the facts to establish case law. And the Supreme Court has decided numerous cases regarding just about every issue of Mr. Morton's brief. Well, with those facts, you apply it to the standard. And the Board of Tax Appeals, the Supreme Court has stated, has a wide discretion of evaluating witness testimony and the weight of the evidence. And the Supreme Court will not reverse the Board of Tax Appeals unless they find an abuse of discretion, which would be an unreasonable or unlawful action, which is not the case here, because both the Board of Revision and Board of Tax Appeals has filed established case law as to what Mr. Morton calls comparables. It was just a typewritten single sheet of paper with a list of sales, dates, addresses. And that is, I mean, just on its face is a raw sales data. Supreme Court has stated that is not actual evidence.
Let me ask you about a point that was made in your brief that I think is resolved, but I'm not 100% sure. There was an issue raised regarding the service of the notice of appeal to this court on the tax commissioner.
Yes.
Is that, then there was a proof of service. Is that issue gone, or is
Mr. Morton submitted documentation thereafter, and from what
the certified
documents I
certified
have
mail match, receipt and
match up.
Okay. So that's not an issue in this case?
Not anymore in this
particular
case.
Okay.
Please proceed.
As to Vladimir Victor, I mean, he's been described as a financial advisor and friend. I think originally he was the beneficiary of a trust. In another case, he's a manager. But the point being, his definition was the property was in disrepair. And the Supreme Court has already decided that even if we consider him the owner or a friend, that just if a property is in disrepair, that testimony does not help the burden of proof of the taxpayer. And as to the burden of proof, due to the Board of Tax Appeals' wide discretion, they can accept all the testimony, some of the testimony, or none of the testimony. And I think that's what here there's talk about the Board of Revision, Board of Tax Appeals is presumed valid. Technically, their decisions are, the proper phrasing would be entitled to consideration, meaning that the taxpayer has the burden to come forward with competent, relevant evidence, which whether it's the appellant's a taxpayer going for a decrease or a Board of Education going for an increase, all appellants have to come forward with competent, relevant evidence. Once they meet that standard, then the fiscal office's value comes into question, and then at that point, the fiscal office would have to rebut the appellant's evidence. That did not happen here, and the evidence that was submitted by the appellants was not competent, relevant evidence as established by case law. And at that point, the fiscal office and Board of Revision is not required to put forth any evidence because the taxpayer has not met their original burden.
What about the notion that there's just a systematic overvaluation in this neighborhood or this community? Now, the fiscal officer uses whatever mass appraisal techniques are used, and that's overseen by the state tax department, right? So
the county auditor oversees, or the fiscal office used to be the county auditor oversees the valuations, and they have a method, but the Supreme Court has even addressed that argument of disparate treatment in Myers versus Cuyahoga County, and they stated that there's always will be some inequalities or nonconformities, but as long as the tax system is not a systematic and intentional departure of a uniform practice, it does not help the appellant. And for an example, I think that means, like, if five houses on the appellant street were valued at $100,000, and then the county said that the appellant's house was valued at $200,000, that would be an example, I think, of disparate treatment. But even in the Supreme Court has stated in WJJK Investments that just because there's different assessed values in the county's valuation method in the same area does not automatically help the appellant meet his burden of proof. So with that, I believe that there's no reason for the Supreme Court to find that the Board of Tax Appeals or Board of Revision abuse their discretion. We believe that they should affirm the decision.
Thank you, Mr. Hardini. Mr. Morton, you've reserved 3 minutes and 16 seconds for rebuttal.
The only thing I'd say, Your Honor, is the Supreme Court's jurisdiction is supervisory in this situation, and it's the only governmental body supervising these folks in Cuyahoga County and at the Board of Tax Appeals, the standard is reasonableness. If the BTA's decision is unreasonable, it's gone. And I think it's clear on a street with those properties, property in the condition of the subject property here, their decision's unreasonable and needs to be reversed, or people in Cuyahoga County are in a lot of trouble, the taxpayers, the people who own property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. We'll now take a brief recess before the next case will be heard, about 5 minutes.